Letters.
On China and Taiwan, royalty, artificial intelligence, activist investors, and retirement.
China's claims on Taiwan.
From Brian C. Chow, Assistant Professor, National Security Affairs Department, Naval War College, Newport, Rhode Island. It is certainly true, as Chaguan observed, that the obsession of China's Communist Party with Taiwan is a political choice, one that actually contradicts the party's original position, Article January the 20th. In the party's first couple of decades, it did not view the people of Taiwan as Chinese to be reunified, and it supported the Taiwanese Communist Party's demands for the island's independence from Japan, not reunification with China. In the 1930s, Mao Zedong himself saw Taiwan as no different from Korea, Vietnam, or other imperialist possessions that deserved self-determination. In fact, neither the Chinese Communist Party nor its rival Kuomintang of China began to view Taiwan through the lens of Chinese reunification until well into the 1940s. One other consequential choice by Beijing was to decide that there could be only one China. However, by asserting that the People's Republic of China is this one China, the Communist Party just makes it easier for those who reject the PRC to reject also any political connections to any China, regardless of who is ruling. Rather than reflexively blame Taiwan's people or America for the cross-strait dispute's longevity and intractability, the Communist Party ought to engage in a little reflection and self-criticism.
The Royal Appendage.
From Michael Phillips, Mensana Research, Fort Lee, New Jersey. Charlemagne unfairly derides the human appendix by comparing it to Europe's Royal Highnesses, who are essentially vestigial and serve little obvious purpose, Article January 20th. In fact, recent research has shown that the appendix has a valuable role in human health by providing a haven for bacteria to repopulate the bowel following a diarrheal illness. Yet before scientists recognised these benefits, generations of doctors were taught that the appendix was better out than in. The same goes for the crowned heads of Europe. If a hereditary monarch wants to follow the path of the appendix from scorn to admiration, then he or she needs to do a better job of advertising their benefits to society.
Tracking AI fakery.
From Andrew Budd, Chief Executive, iProve, London. Plaudits for your leader on defending against fake content generated by artificial intelligence, article Picks and It Didn't Happen, January the 20th, you concluded that attributing trusted sources is the best way to avoid being misled. However, assuming trustworthy sources can continue to identify themselves securely just shifts the problem. AI is already skilled at impersonation. Strong authentication of creators will be the key to stopping AI fakes. AI may not be able to detect AI content, but it will continue to detect AI-generated faces trying to fool biometric authentication. When we set the rules that the AI fakes have to dance to, we can spot them stumble.
From Zach Arnold, Executive Director, MSCI, Raleigh, North Carolina. I agree that the AI hype cycle is probably now shifting downwards as people realise that ChatGPT and related technologies have a long way to go before consistently hitting professional levels of output. Article, The Missing Investment Boom, January 13th. However, we may be using the wrong measure and therefore drawing the wrong conclusions. Most firms interested in harnessing the power of AI won't be buying graphics processing units or ramping up investment in data centre hardware in response to the hype. This is because they will consume or modify ready-made solutions from vendors that will show up on balance sheets as additional operational expenditures. And most of that spending will go to suppliers that already have contracts with these firms, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft. Most of the contacts that I have across industries are intending to increase investment in these technologies and harness them in a firm's products and services in the coming year. If that's the case, the hype cycle may be waning, but the investment will trend upwards from here.
Constructivism delivers.
From Andre Medeiros, Managing Director, Alvarez & Marsal, London. There is certainly a time and a place for activist investors like Bill Ackman to take more public, assertive approaches with their targets and stick to their guns on their demands. Article Buttonwood, January 13th. However, evidence from the past 6 years suggests that a more flexible strategy delivers the best results. Data from Europe and America show that 2 years after being targeted by an activist, company share prices outperform the market by an average of 5.5% if the activist's demands were met in full. When only some activist demands were met, however, the average share price performance over the market rose to 8.8%. This demonstrates that constructive compromise or constructivism, where the company board and activist investor work productively together, delivers the best result for all. No one has a monopoly on good ideas.
You are never too old.
From Jonathan Totman, Nakhon Sitamarat Province, Thailand. Bartleby wrote about the dangers of retiring, giving us the examples of some highly successful octo and nonagenarian outliers who still work, article January 27th. The problem for many successful or mildly so professionals who achieve some authority in the later stages of their professions is that they kid themselves into believing people genuinely appreciate their point of view rather than the authority granted with long service. Most of us aren't really so gifted that our advice is really sought after. I'd like to offer an alternative view. Embrace the later stages of life. Have a purpose, be it a hobby or voluntary support to a cause. And let the next generation do things unencumbered by your suggestions and wisdom.
From Will Moss, Bury St Edmunds, Suffolk. From those of us not blessed with 89-year-old Giorgio Armani's role as head of a multi-billion dollar company, a rare counterfactual, the prospect of an eternity ingesting the soul-sapping gruel of corporate life is truly horrific. Endless meetings, ghastly hotels, budget reviews, office politics, technical committees, audit reviews, performance appraisals, terrible IT, wearying travel, egregious management, away days, policy forums, marketing initiatives, program boards, risk sessions, customer complaints, all these combine to rinse out any joy or meaning you may experience from Monday to Friday, and frequently Saturdays and Sundays too. I am retired and spent 35 minutes this afternoon staring at a large and majestic acacia tree in my garden, because I could and wanted to. I gained more spiritual nourishment from this episode than anything that had occurred in my 40 years in corporate life.